First of all, this call will take about an hour. This call is a series of calls, or part of a series of calls, that CultureSync puts on for people who've become interested in the books that we've written and in some of the work that we're doing. And those books include Tribal Leadership and Three Laws of Performance. And so our goal in all of these calls, this is not an advertisement, or it's not a plug for anything. It's simply a free service that we're offering to people, again, who have become interested in the books that we have. And so there are really four stated goals for this call. The first one is to identify and shift the hidden and the deeply embedded default futures that you may have. Number two is how to really know that you found your noble cause that replaces the default future. And then the third thing is a set of mental exercises that will keep you focused on your noble cause instead of the default future. And then number four is really to transform your beliefs that may make you a little bit stuck. And that's not to in any way insult anyone. We're not saying that you're stuck. But really the state of most careers around the world is that people are stuck, and then they make peace with it. And they call it work-life balance, or they call it wisdom, the making peace process, wisdom, or work-life balance. And the point is, it's not a bad thing to do. It's just far less than you could actually, you know, accomplish if you really kind of went for it. So just in getting some dialogue going here, what I'd love to do is just hear from a few people about what your kind of really burning interest on the call is, or the thing that you'd really like to get out of the call, you know, having heard those four formal objectives that were also part of the description for the call. So if you've got something you'd like to say on that, we'll just hear from three or four people, please hit number one. And if you hit number one on your keypad, we will unmute you. Just want to know what people are most interested in, and that will tell us how to focus the call. So again, if you've got something to say on that, what you'd really like to get out of today's call, please hit number one on your keypad. Okay, looks like we got a few people. Why don't we go to Mary Ann?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi, Dave. So thank you for doing this call. And I am currently working on pretty exciting and big projects in the world.
Uh-huh.
And in the background for me, it's still what I want to give up is those beliefs that keep me from pulling through fully and living into the future possibility of them. So it would be like, I don't, you know, I'm doing this, but what do I know? I don't know anything. Or I don't know enough to pull this off. Or I'm not good at this particular aspect of it, so how do I carry forward? And I somehow carry forward, but there's a lot of anxiety that comes with it. So I'm looking for how to give up the anxiety around it. Is that enough information?
Yeah, no, that's great. So it sounds like you want to take a look at these beliefs that you have, like I don't know anything, or I'm not good at this particular
right. Subject
or aspect, and then you've got a lot of anxiety around that, and all of that. It sounds like is at a minimum is causing you some grief and might even be tripping you up a little bit.
Correct.
Fair. Good. We can definitely speak to that. Mary Ann, thank you. Let's go to George.
Yes.
Hi, George.
Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
All right. Great. the field that I am working in here in healthcare in Abu Dhabi, we have a lot of Westerners we're working with, all the Emiratis, et cetera. And so I'm working in it's almost like a forest that's filled with dinosaurs. And you're trying to kind of keep the forest, you know, like really nice. And out of nowhere, you get hit with these dinosaurs. And there's an entrenched, you know, kind of a stage two that, it's the whole game, stage two and three. And I've just been privileged and to have been immersed in this for the last few months through the three laws and the tribal leadership. And now I'm interested to engage people in conversations that, you know, they really don't get much about, like three laws and tribal leadership, like that kind of stuff is just a turnoff for them.
Right.
So I'm looking for all the ways that are available to get into their world, you know, and have that conversation continue at S4, S5 kind of levels.
Okay. Sounds good, George. So I love how you said it, keeping the forest nice, and then this dinosaur comes in,
yeah,
kind of a stage two or stage three, and so your goal is to really get inside their world.
Yes,
right?
Indeed.
The world of the people that you really need to connect with. Again, I think we can spend some time on that as well. Let's see, scrolling down through the list, how about Christoph? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Hi, Christoph.
Nice to meet you, David. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. What would you like to get out of today's call?
Well, I'm currently in the Landmark Forum right now, and the Advanced course. And I really like the first point that you touched on, really finding out what your noble cause is. And I, just like what Marianne said, minus the being involved in so many things, I have just a huge, enormous passion for entrepreneurship and business, and I don't know what exactly to focus on. And I just really want to find out what my noble cause is.
Right. Right. Yeah, the question of what to focus on as an entrepreneur is a really important one, and we're going to get to some stuff today that this was just to let you know, Christoph, you may find a little unsettling when you look at how businesses are actually set up and the sorts of roles that we try to bring people in. And anyway, there's a little bit of kind of shenanigans that goes on in business, and one of the goals of the call is to really expose some of that has to do with some of the beliefs. And you know, the point of the set of beliefs is we've all kind of bought into it. It's not that somebody has done it to us. It's actually a set of beliefs that we often construct, and it allows us to, you know, to cope with maybe not doing the things we really should be doing, but ultimately it doesn't really get us to where we want to go. It's self-defeating. So we'll take a look at that, and I think that'll really help.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Christoph. Let's just hear from one more. How about Jim?
Yes, Dave. How are you?
Good, Jim. How are you?
Fine. Mostly, I was just interested in your perception of just the actions that are necessary to develop a leading manager role from whatever the existing place may be to the next level. Those specific steps on building that and my question was more centered around my kids coming out of USC and how the first 3 years or 5 years of that life
right. Is
most effectively done. And there's a lot of opinion and story around different ways of doing it. And you seem to be a little bit more on the track of the supercharged way.
Yeah. That's definitely true. Well, so Jim, what I like about what you're saying, there's a number of things about it. One is you're really focused on the steps, right? So sometimes in these kind of discussions, it's easy to get lost in the head trip or the philosophy of it all. And actually,
right,
that's useful. You know, it's useful to go down the philosophical road. But at the end of it, there has to be, you know, people who are, to use your word, supercharged, do A, and people who aren't do B. And it's your choice. But then once you get to the point of figuring all that out, ultimately, you know, it's up to each individual to choose.
Let me an example. When you're in a sports team, you're really clear what you need to do to improve your batting average. You're really clear the structures in place.
Right.
To play professional sports. To play professional business, it's not really clear except for what you're writing about.
It's not clear at all. It's not clear at all. And
everyone has an opinion on it, and you've thought about things that are way beyond the traditional way what's going on.
Well, in fact, Jim, so on the basis of, you know, of what you just said, and also I think this goes back to what Christoph said, and see, as I'm looking back, it even touches on kind of what George says and what Marianne said too about beliefs. I was planning a different order for this, but let's start in the order that I think will really serve the people here on the call. And this has to do with really finding those beliefs that may be making you a little stuck. And again, I just want to emphasize, not insulting anyone. I mean, I've certainly been stuck. Most people are stuck in their careers from the moment they enter them until the moment they leave. And the key is they don't know they're stuck. Okay, so that they're stuck and they don't know they're stuck. And a lot of people feel all kinds of, to use Marianne's word, a lot of anxiety about that, right? I want to get unstuck. I don't know how to get stuck. And what a lot of the advice comes down to is make peace with the fact that you're stuck. You know, find ways to express yourself outside of your business, outside of your career. I was dealing with this early in my career, and I hired a coach who actually gave me the following advice. Your career is not set up, I mean, no career is ever set up to really fulfill you. And so you need to find a way to become fulfilled outside of your career. And I said, well, like what? And he said, well, like become really good at your computer. I mean, that was actually his advice. You know, you won't get fulfillment in your career, so you got to find it someplace else. Just so you know, from the Culture Sync perspective, we don't buy into that at all. We don't buy into that at all. To quote Tom Peters, life can be, and we would even argue, you know, should be for those people who are up to it, a 24/7 kind of adrenaline rush. Now, the difficulty with saying adrenaline rush is at some point you crash on adrenaline, but imagine that you've got that experience, but it's actually fueled by something other than adrenaline. It's fueled by inspiration. It's fueled by passion, right? It's fueled by something that is limitless. And people can have those careers, and we specifically try to, you know, work with not just people in their careers, but whole organizations where everyone has that experience. So let's just jump, you know, right into this point, right, about beliefs that may be holding you back. You know, the thing to keep in mind here is that people have what we call success formulas, okay? And the thing about a success formula is it's a belief, okay? I mean, that's the structure of it. It's a belief. And it takes a very particular form, okay? So as I'm going through this, please ask yourself, do I have these going on, you know, in my head? So a success formula, here's the format of it. If I do X, I'm likely to get Y. Okay, if I do X, I'm likely to get Y. The other form it can take is a kind of expectation, and that's if I do X, I deserve to get Y. So if I do X, I'm likely to get Y, or I deserve to get Y. Okay, most of us have those things going on. And, you know, Jim, as you're talking about, when kids pop out of college, often what they really think is, you know, if I'm good at my job, if I hit the numbers, if I show people that I go above and beyond, then I deserve a promotion. Then I'm likely to get, you know, elevated to the next step. Okay, and that, you know, actually holds true for a while. The problem is, if you take those statements that you have, if I do X, I'm likely to get Y, or I deserve to get Y, and actually test them against the people who are supercharged, and you know, let's talk about the entrepreneurs or the CEOs of the really great companies, you know, just to use an iconic figure. Test them against Bill Gates when he was running Microsoft. Test them against Steve Jobs. Test them against Richard Branson. Do you think those are the success formulas that those individuals have? And so let's kind of become interactive on this. If you can kind of think through, you know, if I do X, I'm likely to get Y. In a minute here, I'm going to ask you to hit number 2 on your phone, and we can kind of interact about it. But let me just give you 2 really common examples, probably the most common examples of a success formula. The first one is called the empty desk syndrome. Okay, and it goes like this. If I get through all of my email and I get through everything on my desk, then I will show people that I'm on top of everything, and as a result, I deserve a promotion. So if I get through everything, all this paperwork on my desk, all this, you know, email in my inbox, if I just get through it all, I'm likely to show people that I'm really good at my job and I'm probably going to get promoted, or I certainly deserve to get promoted. Okay? I will tell you that holds up to almost no one who's supercharged. Almost no one. And my proof for it? You know, I've got emails of a lot of the people that I'm talking to. If you shoot them an email, like the chances that you're going to get a response on any kind of timely basis approach 0. Okay, that's just not how they work. Okay, so it doesn't really hold up. So again, let's just, you know, and a success formula is not good or bad. It's just a belief, right? We just want to test the belief to see if it has any merit. And so if you can kind of think through a success formula that you have that follows that formula, if I do X, I'm likely to get Y, or I deserve to get Y, you know, then hit number 2. And so while that's happening, I'll just give you one other example. I promise you 2 examples. And I see that one person already hit number 2. It's called the Willy Loman disease, okay? The Willy Loman disease. If you're not familiar with Willy Loman, it's from Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. And Willy Loman's success formula was, if I am well-liked, then I deserve to do well, okay? And I will do well. I'm likely to do well. If I'm well-liked, and if you are familiar with the story, of course, it ended with, as is in the title, The Death of a Salesman. The whole story is an indictment of that success formula. So let's see. We've got a number of people who've hit number two. So let's just start from the bottom of the list this time. Lori, what's your success formula? Lori?
Hi, Dave. Sorry, I was slow on the mark there. Yeah,
oh, that's okay.
If I do it like they told me to, then I'll succeed, or then I'll be effective.
Okay.
Or I'll be doing it right. It's something around doing it right and following instructions
right.
Impeccably.
Oh, no, that's great. Now, Laura, I want to work with you a little bit on the why. You know, the
mm-hmm.
X and Y part. So, is your goal to be effective, or is your goal to get something like a promotion, a next step, a recognition, praise, more money, or is that not going on in your case?
Oh, it's definitely going on. It's more like whatever the next level is,
mm-hmm.
whatever the perception of the next level is that I'm supposed to get to, that if I do it like I'm supposed
yep.
to, that will happen.
Yep. So if I do it like they've told me to do it, then, and I'm going to skip over the, you know, then I'll be effective, and then I think probably you've got another success formula, which is if I'm effective, then I'll get to the next level. So if we just kind
yeah.
of combine those, it's something like if I do it like they've told me to do it, then I'll get to the next level.
Yeah.
Make sense? Yeah, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, belief is just it's something that you can test. In academia, we talk about it needs to be falsifiable, you know, meaning you can actually set up tests, you know, to see if it works. So we're gonna test Lori's. But let's just hear from a couple more. Let's go to, how about Anna? Anna, you on? Anna?
Wait. Am I on?
You're on.
Phew.
It
okay,
actually
if
worked.
If I don't hit the button, if I hit the button this way, it should. All of a sudden, I was feeling a little bit of anxiety going, oh, my gosh, I'm not on. Well, good morning.
Good morning. That's really so your success formula is if I hit the button, then they'll be able to hear me. And I'm hitting the button, but they're not hearing me. That's very
exactly
good.
Right. That's a story right there. I'm totally with what you're talking about. I'm an executive recruiter and a new coach. So I would say my success mantra is when it comes to when I cold call or when I work with my clients and give them my all, I should get the business.
Uh-huh.
You
that's
know,
good.
Yeah.
Well, and so that's clear. So you're going down the expectation road, right? So when I cold call and I give them my all, I really deserve to get the business,
well,
right?
Maybe that's exactly what I'm saying, yeah.
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 Even though I can probably say anywhere from I'm likely to get it to I should, which is frankly, yeah, the deserving. So.
Right, right. And so, you know, that sets up expectations. And just, you know, what I want all of you to see is that the success formula leads to a couple of places, okay? If it works, it leads to stage three, okay? So in Lori's case, you know, if I do what they've told me to do, and then I get promoted, then I look at other people and they say, well, my life sucks because I didn't get promoted. Well, okay, but you haven't followed instructions. And I follow instructions. You should look at me because I follow instructions and I got promoted, just look at me. So it either takes you to stage three or, you know, and then Anna, just to play with yours a little bit, well, you know, I mean, I cold call people all the time. I give them my all. And, you know, people aren't loyal. People kind of suck, right? You know, this isn't working. I don't know what to do. People just don't really follow through. They don't really respond to value. So the other place it takes you is stage two. So hopefully everybody on the call here is, you know, familiar with the stages we talk about in tribal leadership. Stage two is my life sucks. Stage three is I'm great. But that's really the only two places it can take you. It doesn't really take you to stage four. It's just not set up to do that, right? So if we didn't, you know, crack into it anymore, and we're actually going to crack into it, you know, pretty directly here in a minute, just realize that by its nature, at best, it takes you to stage three. At best, doesn't it? By design, cannot take you higher. That's really cool, Anna. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Let's just hear from one more, and then we're gonna, you know, as I said, really kind of set a nuclear bomb next to this. Let's hear from Robert Walker. Robert, what's your success formula?
Oh, if I make enough calls, I'll get business.
Oh, that's great. So if I make enough calls, I'll get business.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that we teach people, in the kind of training field. We teach that to people, and it's a bit of a noble lie. By noble lie, I mean, there's some truth to it. And, you know, in general, making calls is probably better than, you know, doing video games on your computer. But really, if you look at what generates business, it's not cold calls. You know, but again, we want people cold calling, because then if they cold call and they're successful, then we, you know, the company, you know, become really successful. So great. So we've got three to really play with. So we've got Lori's, if I do it like they told me to do, I'll get to the next level. We've got Anna's, if I cold call and give them my all, I should or I'm likely to get the business. And then Robert, if I make enough, you know, calls, then I'll get the business, right? So three really kind of different ones. Now, again, I just want to, you know, let's test those against people who are really supercharged, you know, people like Richard Branson. Do you think Richard Branson, you know, to use Lori's, does it like he's told? Absolutely not. He tells his board to go jump in a lake, and he's going to go on an adventure with his buddies, hot air ballooning or test some new plane. I mean, okay, he just doesn't do that. In fact, if someone tells him what to do, that becomes a reason to not do it. Now, I'm not saying that's the better success formula. I'm just saying if you look at Richard Branson, he just says no to that, you know, or Steve Jobs. Here's how we tell people to market products that people will buy. You survey them, you do focus groups, you really get inside the mind of the consumer, and you figure out what need they have, the want that they're expressing that is unfulfilled, and you give it to them and they'll buy it. And what does Steve Jobs do? No. We're going to come up with something that people want that they can't even articulate. We're going to come up with something so cool that they will only know they want it when they see it. So again, he just says no to the success formulas that come out of the field of marketing or come out of the, you know, the whole field of strategy. He just says no to it. He just does it differently. And if you think of people who've really, you know, built very large empires, I think of one of the really successful people in real estate in New York. He's been dead now for a number of years, but some of you may know the name, Eddie S. Gordon. And there was a company by his name that was eventually acquired by another company in a whole series of acquisitions. But people still remember, you know, Eddie. Eddie didn't do cold calls. You know, Eddie had people who did cold calls, but Eddie didn't do cold calls. What did he do? You know, he hung out with the really connected people, and he didn't come from a background where that was obvious how to do that, but, you know, his success formula was, no, you take everything that people tell you, and you do just the opposite. You know, like one of the success formulas is you really want to kind of pinch your pennies. Eddie ran this whole series of ads in the New York Times. I want you to imagine this. A whole page, this was, you know, many years ago before the internet, whole page ad, blank, and way down at the bottom is this little tiny, almost kind of look like an inverted V, you know, just like a little kind of thing at the very bottom of the page, probably no bigger than a half inch. And the next day he ran another ad that was the same thing, but now it was like you could tell it was the very top of a building. You know, just very top. You couldn't tell what building, but you could tell it was the top of a building. And he ran these all week, and every week or every day the ad got a little bigger, and what eventually emerged was it was clearly a very famous building in New York and that he had gotten the listing on. So he was now, you know, the agent in charge of leasing that building. And it was a way of letting everybody know, if you want to get in this building, I'm the guy to talk to. Now, that defies a lot of success principles, right? It's arrogant. It's, you know, it's brash. It's spending a lot of money. People around him thought he was nuts because that's expensive. Five full-page ads in the New York Times back when that was how you reach people. He just didn't do it. So, okay, let's go to the nuclear bomb stage. Here's how a company really works, okay, how it really works. I want you to imagine an old kind of community bank, you know, like we think of sort of during the Depression, and there are people that are really good at making smart loans, okay? They are geniuses at making loans, at making big loans, you know, loans to people who are going to pay money, but the really big loans. And as a result, there's a vault. okay? And the vault now has a lot of money because these geniuses have done what they do. Now, the geniuses who've now amassed this amount of money have a problem. In fact, they've got two problems. The first problem is somebody could come and steal their money, right? We got bank robbers in the Depression, and this was, you know, before the FDIC and stuff was insured. So, I mean, we really need to come up with a way to make sure that nobody steals our money, okay? And the other problem that we have is we need to make sure that we're getting, you know, incrementally more money. We don't just want it sitting there in a vault, but we want people to, you know, make out little loans, you know, little safe loans and do things that are kind of safe. They're not geniuses like me, but we want people who are, you know, good at their little role, okay? And I'm being a little condescending here intentionally. So we hire two categories of people. We hire security guards, and we hire machine parts, okay? The security guard, it's his or her job to make sure that nobody steals the money, okay? So they stand there in their little uniform. They might have a gun and a little badge from a security company. Now, here's a question. What's the success formula going through that security guard's mind? It's probably something like, if I do my job well and nobody steals any money, I could get promoted, right? I could be the head security guard. Probably not. But even if it worked out, head security guard, how's that going for that person? Probably that's not what the person really wants. So maybe they've got a different success formula. Maybe if I do my job really well, when the armored car, you know, companies come in, that's where the really high power security guards are, they're going to see how well I'm guarding this bank, and I'm going to get a job offer. And who knows, maybe I could even someday become president of the armored car company. Okay? Probably not. Okay, why? Because the armored car company has geniuses, just like the geniuses that built the bank, right? And they, too, hire security guards, and they hire machine parts. Okay, so we've talked about security guards. It's kind of your job to make sure that nobody steals the money. Now, think about companies today. There are security guards all over the place. And it's not just that they're security guards. They might have titles like controller or, you know, accountant, or they might have titles like, you know, vice president in charge of compliance. Something like that. But those are basically security guard functions. It's your job to make sure nobody steals the petty cash. It's your job to make sure that we don't have, you know, Enron here. It's your job to make sure that nobody steals the money, okay? And for those people, they've got these little success formulas going on. If I, going back to Lori, if I do it like they told me to do it, I'm going to get promoted. And the overall success formula says if I do that really well, I could be one of the geniuses. Okay, and I will tell you categorically, having spent a whole bunch of time with geniuses, they hang out with other geniuses. They do not hang out with people who climb the ladder of these little success formulas. Those people just aren't even on their radar. Okay, they hang out with other geniuses, and they want, you know, security guards, and they want machine parts. Okay, so what's a machine part? A machine part is like, in the old bank example, the bank teller. You know, it's your job to make sure that you don't give money out to anybody unless you check their ID and fill out the paperwork the right way and you count out the money. And you just, it's your job to do to make sure that there aren't any mistakes. Okay, a loan manager is a machine part. It's your job to make a certain kind of auto loan. It's your job to make a certain kind of mortgage loan. But you got to make it by the numbers, and it's your job above all to make sure that we get our little return on that money. So the machine parts become part of the overall mechanism of making even more money, but realize that the geniuses have really just delegated that to people, okay? And the machine part never converts, almost never converts, to a genius. The machine part never converts to a genius. But the success formula that a lot of the machine parts have is, if I do my job really well, I'll get promoted, and then I'll get promoted again. And then I might, you know, hang out with the geniuses, and I'll really learn how they, and I'm going to be so good at my job, and my track record is going to be so impeccable that they will welcome me into the fold. No, that's just not how it works. So to go back to Jim's question, you know, perception of actions that are necessary, okay, let me give you the success formula of a genius, okay, not the success formula of a security guard or a machine part, okay, this is the success formula of a genius, okay. My genius is X, and so I will do X. Not any more complicated than that. My genius is X, and so I will do X. I will do that thing that I am a genius at doing. Now, you got a problem, right? Because just hanging out as a solo genius, that's not very interesting. So you're going to surround yourself with people. Well, with who? Well, with other geniuses, okay? So you're going to hang out with other geniuses who are doing their genius thing. And you're all going to hang out kind of with your genius thing. And as a result of all these geniuses hanging around, you're going to create piles of money, you're going to create great industries, breakthrough innovation, really cool stuff. Now you've got two problems, right? First problem is someone could steal your stuff. So you want to hire security guards. So you hire security guards. You don't lie to them. You just say, I'm going to pay you X dollars to, you know, watch this money and make sure that it doesn't get stolen. And you're also going to hire machine parts, which are the people to make sure, you know, like in the case of Apple, you know, working in the stores, you want to make sure that people are happy when they buy their iPod. Now, those people might at some point develop a success formula. You haven't really taught it to them. It's not like, you know, you've told them a lie. You know, you just said, look, here's the transaction. If you do this job, I will pay you this amount of money, and every year we'll review it, and maybe you might get a little increase, you might get a little bonus, but that's basically the social contract. But they operate under the illusion that if I do X, I'm likely to get Y, or I deserve to get Y. And if you ask that to the geniuses would say, I never said that. I said, do this job and you'll get paid this amount of money. That's the only thing I've ever promised. Now, if you ever wanted to step up as a genius and start doing genius stuff, then I'd love to hang out with you. But that little success ladder is not going to take you to hang out with other geniuses. Okay? So, again, the answer to the question that Jim said is, you know, what are the actions? You want to figure out your genius thing, and you want to do your genius thing, and then you want to find other geniuses, and you want to hang out with them. And then the problem is, of course, you want to create a great kind of tribe of geniuses, and that's where a lot of the tribal leadership comes in. You want to fuse those people together at stage four. You want to get them working on MicroStrategy so that they're not just kind of sitting around, you know, doing genius stuff in the proximity of one another. You want to make them an epically good world-class team. And, of course, then the problem is we need security guards and we need people who are machine parts. So I realize that's a lot of stuff, and that can be, you know, a little disheartening to people. But just curious if there's any just kind of quick reactions to that. So tell you what, if you just got a quick kind of reaction, what you heard in it or what you see as the application to you, please hit number one on your phone. Just hit number one. We'll just get some quick reactions from people about what you heard in that. Okay, let's hit the wrong button on my computer here. Let's go to Bill.
Hey, can you hear me?
Can you hear you, Bill? So what do you think of all that?
Okay. Well, the key, if you're taking this rather personally, might be, well, how do I figure out what my genius is?
Yep.
You know, and if you work, so I can take a company I'm working with and look at, there are people who exhibit genius maybe in a streaky fashion.
Yeah.
Yet there's not consistency.
Right.
And then there's things like, well, maybe this guy's a genius here, but somewhere else he'd be better. But just say generally there's a critical mass of real talent that just comes in and but then it goes for the most part. Like it comes and goes.
Yeah. Yeah, that is absolutely.
I'm hearing those
absolutely.
Two. Yeah. I'm hearing those two kind of as, well, all right, well, how do we be effective around bringing out the genius and having some certainty around it personally and in others? And then when we get the group, how do we have that be consistent and show up in their performance?
Yeah, exactly, right. And so we sort of want to marshal their genius, right? We need to somehow,
yeah.
You know, now the trick is if we manage it, right, if we put it in boxes and give it job descriptions and reporting relationships, then it ceases to become genius, and then it's become a machine part. Genius doesn't convert to machine part. It just, they're built, they're, you know, just doesn't work that way. And so the first thing is, you know, how do you really know what your genius is? Here's the truth about it. Your tribe will tell you what your genius is. You know, you as a person, and I don't just mean Bill, but, you know, all of us, myself included, are really lousy at determining what our genius is. We are really bad at it. We'll think of things where we, you know, studied them in school. You know, like I was a business major in school, and so I guess my genius is business. No, actually, if you're really a genius at business, you probably wouldn't have been studying it in school. You probably would have been out doing it. And so,
great.
You know, how do you know what your genius is? You find people in your tribe, and here's the, you know, million-dollar question. So tell me, what am I really good at doing? What am I epically good at doing? And I don't just mean like a strength, like the way that Gallup would think about it, but I mean, what am I, you know, what little kind of area, what little niche am I so good at doing that's what I should be devoting myself to? And then, you know, the second challenge, as you say, Bill, is we need to somehow get all of those working together and convert it into, you know, into business performance. And that's where, you know, again, you got to create a great tribe out of those geniuses, stage four, stage five, working on actual micro strategies. You know, otherwise it's, again, just a bunch of geniuses kind of entertaining themselves. So thank you. Let's just hear from one more. How about Liz? Any reaction to any of this, Liz?
Hello?
Hi.
Hey, Liz, you just muted yourself. You unmute. Here, I'll unmute you. Hey, Liz.
Hello?
Try again.
Can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, my question was kind of similar. It's what's the quickest way to identify your genius? was my question.
Yeah.
But I really get asking your tribe is a really great way to do it. And I
have,
was like out of my box thinking. And I have done that, actually, when I look at various points the last few years, ask my community what I do and what I'm good at and what.
Right.
So I suppose my question now is, when you've got the feedback from your tribe, like you may get different things from different people, how would you take that information to get really clear on what you should go to work on?
That's a great question, Liz. And Liz, I'll tell you what, since the two people who commented said that that's really a burning question, is how do we really identify our genius? Julian, we should do a future Saturday call just on that topic. You know, how do you identify your genius? And
great.
We can go really deep on it. There are some practices that can really help. There's some self-exploration. I spent years and years and years on that, just, you know, personally. When I met John King, and I hope all of you know John, and if you don't, you should get to know him. John is one of the best coaches I've ever met. In fact, may even be the best coach I've ever met. I'd done a lot of work on that, and some of our original, you know, discussions were, you know, then how do you take, you know, your genius once you find it and get it working in a system that really loves to squash genius, because that's what organizations do. So just, I'll give you some quick answers, Liz, you know, just so we don't leave you hanging. I mean, one thing you ask people, right, you know, what am I good at doing? You also reflect when I'm in the zone, you know, when I'm doing stuff that is just effortless and easy, and, I mean, I can do it all day long. I mean, what is that? You know, what's that stuff you're doing? The other thing I would really suggest is read biographies of people who are geniuses, you know, or watch movies about them. They got to be, you know, kind of true to life. The people get really hung up about this next, you know, figure that I'm going to mention as either sort of the, you know, God's gift to something or kind of a bad guy in general. But Patton, you know, Patton was a really troubled guy. I'm talking about the World War II general. But if you watch the movie or you read a biography about him, you realize this guy's absolute genius was advancing, you know, in a war when nobody thought that could be done. And he just saw how to do it. He saw all the ins and outs. He felt like it was something that you know, he was literally born to do. Literally, that was why he was on the planet. People who are geniuses will report when they first get exposure to that area that they're really, that's where their genius lies. It's as though they're coming home. Richard Feynman, the physicist, talked about when he was doing algebra and geometry problems, it's like he was home. He just knew it. So anyway, we'll do a whole call about that. If that's interesting for people?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. And it looks like we've got a burning question, and it's from Liz. Liz, it looks like you hit number 5 on your phone. Do you have a burning question?
That was me trying to get myself off mute. I apologize.
Oh, okay. No problem. Again, if you got a burning question, then you can hit that number. Hit number 5.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you, Liz. So hopefully, you know, that gets you thinking, and the to-dos are, you know, coming out of that. Number one, really examine your success formula. You know, write it down, think about it. Number two is test it. Test it against people you really admire. And I don't just mean the big iconic figures, but think about somebody who's really good at what they're doing, maybe a genius, you know, maybe a great entrepreneur, someone you come in contact with. And then ask yourself the question, do they follow a success formula that's like that? And in many cases, they don't. One of the things we do at USC in our entrepreneur program is we have people go interview successful entrepreneurs. And we don't quite phrase it this way, but one of the things that we really hope will come out of it is a sense of disorientation. You know, wow, I really thought that if I do X, I'll be really successful. And I interview this person, they don't do X at all. You know, they can't even type, much less get through all their emails. You know, they don't wow, I mean, I really thought that running a business had to do with being, you know, really bulletproof on your bookkeeping, and, you know, they handle their bookkeeping on the back of an envelope. Wow. Okay, so it forces you to see their genius in action, and often you're kind of stunned with the lack of infrastructure around them. Or if they have infrastructure, it's probably not infrastructure that they've put in. It's probably, again, security guard or machine part infrastructure. And then you really want to ask the question, you know, what's my genius? And the success formula for the people who are let's mute that line, Julian. And so the success formula, the people who are really great, you know, who are supercharged, to use Jim's word, follow the success formula. You know, my genius is X, and so I will do X. And then it's about getting that together in a tribe and sort of supercharging it. So just one more topic we're going to handle. This is one that requires, you know, some work and some reflection. I'll give you the practices that come out of it. But so this has to do with finding the default future that is so big and is so vast you probably cannot see it. Okay, it is so big, it is so vast, it's like water to the fish, you know. Now, I'll give you a story that illustrates this. I was working with a CEO of a fairly small company, and I asked him the question, what's your default future? And remember, default future answers the question, what's likely to happen if nothing unexpected comes along? And he was talking about his business, and he said, well, you know, what's likely to happen is it's going to be really tough going for the next few years. The market's really has contracted. It seems to be coming back a little bit, but it's not coming back very fast. It's going to be a struggle. You know, the really good people in the company are going to get bored, or they're going to get burned out. They're going to leave, or they might quit and stay, you know, just have a general kind of performance malaise. And it's really not a lot of inspiration, not a lot of fun. It's kind of going to be a grind, but, you know, we'll get through it. So that was his default future, right, and the default future of this company. So then I asked him the question, if you've listened to other calls on this or you're familiar with three laws of performance, this will be familiar, is that what you want? Well, no. You know, I don't want that as a default future. And realize that people are going to take actions that are consistent with that default future. So if that is the default future, then people will act without a lot of passion, without a lot of innovation. So he saw that, and he said, no, I don't want that. In fact, he, you know, kind of pounded the table, and he said, hell no. If you've listened to other calls, you'll know what that means. He was really willing to reject the default future. And okay, then the next question is, if you don't want that, what do you want instead? And he said, well, I want a company that's, you know, inspiring, and I want it to grow, and I want it to do stuff that nobody's ever done before, and I want it to be really novel. And he started listing this out, and we got other people involved in the company and really talking about this you know, invented future. And the noble cause that came out of that was that our company is going to create a better world, and I, you know, can't get specific here because you might actually know what the company is. It's a small company, but it's one that touches a lot of us. And it, you know, so we're going to make a better world through, and then he described this thing that the business was going to do. And everybody got supercharged about that in the company. It was going to be cool, and it was going to be a brand new day, and people realized, you know, we're really turning a chapter, to use another metaphor, and this is a new chapter, and it's going to be better, and it's going to be fun. And I checked in with them about 3 months later, and they had largely done a lot of the things that they said they were going to do. They created some little micro strategies that were going to advance them in that direction. They had created some actions that were really going to advance them in that direction. And when I checked in with them a few months later, this guy had really slid down into stage two. You know, well, why? I mean, you kind of got your, you know, inspiring business, and it's working. I mean, you're making more money, and people are really turned on, so what's the problem? And he said, you know, the problem is, this really isn't what I want. Okay, well, so what's the problem? Well, I don't know. It's just, you know, I know it's what I said I wanted, but it's not really what I want. Okay, so here's what's going on behind the scenes, and this is going on for you, and it's going on for me. Okay, this is just what happens for people. Oh, I gotta stop here for a sec. Skip, hit number 5. Skip, do you have a burning question?
The moment while I unmute Skip here.
Conversations, both in classrooms and small 2 and 3 person conversations about what do you do when you think you're a stage 4, 5 thinker and you're in an organization or even work for a boss who their default is a stage 3 or maybe a stage 2, 3. And so what are your thoughts on how to pursue that nudging of them? While at the same time, to me, sort of the paradox is, even if you think you're at a higher level than they are by default, each of you in your own way, how do you not get so arrogant about it that you don't learn from them as well when they have something to offer.
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, it's not super helpful to kind of go around and just sort of peg people. You know, they're like stage two and they're kind of stage three, and you know, that's actually a misuse of the tribal leadership stuff. Remember, we're talking about tribes here. We're not talking about, you know, individuals. What often happens, Skip, is that an organization is set up without a genius, you know, without that kind of, you know, my genius is X and I'll do X. And often kind of like machine parts, they stumble into a successful way to approach business to make money. But they really, you know, they don't know how to scale it. They don't know how to advance it. They realize that the competitors are kind of breathing down their neck and they're small and they don't know how to grow. And that often leads to kind of a stage two or stage three feeling at the very center of the company. You know, instead of it being kind of the, you know, genius that's doing their thing surrounded by other geniuses, it's almost like there's no brain in the company, right? Or there's no soul in the company. And a lot of businesses are that way, not just small businesses, but a lot of really large businesses are that way. So what you want to do is learn everything you can from them. You know, learn everything you can. But realize that for you to become, to use the Warren Bennis expression, a twice-borner, for you to really reinvent yourself, which is actually where we're going, you know, in this part of the discussion, is going to require you to do things that those people around you have never done, probably haven't thought about doing, and may not have the guts to do. I mean, so just learn from them, but realize that you're going to take a road that not a lot of people have taken, and by taking that road, you're just going to have different experiences. You're going to have, you know, very different life. You're going to have a life of reinvention, and a life that's really guided by this noble cause. I don't know if that, I mean, that's a whole discussion, you know, like what do you learn from people at two and three, and then another discussion that comes out of that is, how do you make sure stage three doesn't squash you as you're doing this stuff, or how do you make sure that stage two doesn't just pull you down in the mud every time you know, get something going? And really the answer is, you want to set up a kind of parallel tribe that you're a part of that's really doing more stage four, stage five stuff. You want to ground yourself as a member of that tribe. Do a lot of the reinvention work, a lot of the work of finding your genius in that tribe. That's a lot of what the tribal leadership intensive calls are set up to do, you know, to get you involved in one of those tribes as part of this training program. But Skip, does that at least in part address some of what you raised?
Yeah, I think so, especially the last thing you said. If your organization or if your boss's default is a lower stage, you just find other tribes, and some of them may be in your own work group, or some of them may be networking outside of it, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's about setting up, you know, a great tribe. I mean, if you think about a lot of these experiences that we put a lot of value in, you know, I look at the executive MBA, and, you know, in case you're not familiar with my background, I've been teaching that at USC for many years. That is a group. In our Los Angeles program, it's about 70 people. We run one in San Diego, it's a little smaller, and we run another one in Shanghai. Or sorry, not Shanghai. Yeah, I'm sorry, it is Shanghai. That's even a little smaller than that. But the real kind of design of it from a tribal leadership perspective is we want that group to be stage four. And then in these individuals, you know, these are, you know, supercharged individuals, they're all, you know, senior executives. So they're sort of battling it out at work every day, doing the stage two, stage three thing. But if you don't have a group that really grounds you in stage four, you just kind of give in to the wild, wild west of it all. And you never really know how to elevate yourself. You never really know how to reinvent yourself. You need a group that grounds you. And again, we try to do that in the tribal leadership intensive calls, you know, to create that kind of a community. That becomes your, you know, the home of your genius, the home of, you know, your noble cause, where people know you by your noble cause. And we go through the whole process of really figuring out what your noble cause is and setting it, if you ever need any help with that. So just to, you know, complete this, because we're getting near the end here, here's what I'd really like all of you to imagine, that there's this Category 5 hurricane. You know, we've all seen those certainly on the Weather Channel or on the news. I've been through one Category 5 hurricane. I was in Mexico, didn't know that there was a hurricane on the way, just landed there, and this Category 5 was Ignacio a few years ago. Wasn't a direct hit from where I was, but I just walked out on the porch, and just to behold the strength of this, you know, mammoth storm was both inspiring and really scary. You have a default future, and I mean all of you, myself included, that is like that. It is so big. It is so vast, it is so powerful, that we often don't even see it. You know, we can kind of imagine a Category 5 hurricane because it's normally, you know, it's normally sunny, right? So we can notice the difference. But imagine that you live in a part of the world that just gets hit with one Category 5 hurricane after another with no break in between. That's just kind of, you know, how it is, right? So a Category 5 hurricane will spin off its own little tornadoes, and it will spin off, it'll give off these bands that can be major squalls in and of themselves. What a lot of us spend our time doing is handling those little default futures that this big monster default future is spinning off. Okay, and so in the case of the person who said my business, you know, it's boring and it's going to be drudgery, he was handling a little kind of spin-off band that this big gigantic default future was presenting. So then the question is, how do you know what that default future is, and how do you really unseat that? So I'll give you the A-minus version, and I'll give you the A-plus version. Okay, the A-minus version asks you to ask yourself this question: what is my default future as a leader? Remember, this is the A-minus version. What is my default future as a leader? Okay, so I ask the person that I told you about, the little business owner, you know, what's your default future as a leader? And here's what he said. Oh, you know, I get inspired from time to time, but then I kind of sink down into the drudgery of it, and then I get inspired again, and then kind of sink down into the drudgery, and I don't really know what I'm doing. And so I guess, you know, what's likely to happen in my default future as a leader is I'll just kind of vacillate between inspiration and, you know, kind of depression. Okay, that's his default. That's a much greater default future. So notice that's going to spin off little kind of exercises where he's going to find default futures and he's going to replace them with a noble cause that's inspiring. But overall, this big kind of mammoth storm says, no, that little exercise that you did, that's kind of led its course, and now it's probably time to go back to be depressed again, right? But he didn't see it because it was so big and it was so vast, he didn't see it. So again, the A-minus version of this, the, you know, not the super, super, supercharged one, but one that most of us can kind of get into pretty easily, is what is my default future as a leader? Now, here's the A-plus version, okay? This may hurt your brain when you hear it. It kind of hurt mine in thinking about it. But what is my default future as a person? Okay, what is my default future as a person? Okay. So I was talking to someone the other day, a woman, and she said, you know, my default future in my career is really not that great. You know, I mean, I'm really handling kind of child issues and family issues, and I'm just kind of, you know, I'm just dialing it in at work. Okay, so like her default future kind of as a leader, as a business leader, that really wasn't kind of where the oomph was for her. So then I asked her the question, well, what's your default future, you know, as a person? And she said, well, you know, I'm going to raise a great family, and I'm going to, you know, my family will be, you know, good, but, and then at some point I'll kind of, you know, get back in and I'll supercharge my career, and but then it's not really the time for that right now. I'm just kind of putting in the motions right now. Okay, so when you really think about that default future as a person, it's actually not that inspiring. Okay, that's the big kind of massive storm. Now, that's going to spin off, again, a lot of these little cells, a lot of these little tornadoes that she was really good at handling. But the really big one, your default future as a human being, as a person, is one that she really hadn't thought about. This is the most important question when it comes to being, you know, to use Jim's word, supercharged. If you want to think about your default future as a person, okay, as a human being, what is my default future? What is likely to happen in my role as a human being if nothing unexpected comes along? Now, I want to give you some really quick practices that will help to illustrate this, okay? Two practices, and you got to do them both. You got to do them both for a week. So every night before you go to bed, you're going to write one sentence down. Just write down the first sentence that comes to mind that follows this format, okay? So here's the sentence. Who I was today was. Okay, who I was today was. And you're just going to write that down. So who I was today was, you know, I was a good person today. So you just write that down. I was a good person today. Or who I was today, you know, I really got a lot done. I feel like I was an achiever today. You're just going to write that down. Again, 7 days, so 7 evenings, you're just going to say who I was today was, and you're going to write that down. Do not look at what you write down the next day. In fact, you're going to write it down, and you're going to put it someplace where you can't see it. Now, I've done this myself. I have a bowl next to my bed, and I would write it down just before I go to bed, and I would put it face down and update it, and I would put it face down on the bowl. Now, here's the second exercise. Every morning when you get up, you're going to ask yourself a different question. who I will be today will be, and you're going to complete that sentence. So who I will be today will be, and you might say, you know, an inspiring person, a person who makes a difference, a person who gets other people excited. You know, today I will be someone that will be personally motivating to everyone that I come in contact with. You're going to write it down, you're going to date it, you're going to put it face down in that bowl. And then at the end of those 7 days, when you've got 7 evenings done and you've got 7 mornings done, you're going to pull those sheets of paper out, you're going to put them in chronological order, and you're just going to notice what happened. Okay, just going to notice. So I set this, you know, goal, this intention at the start of the day, but really at the end of the day, I hadn't really done it. You know, or maybe you set a kind of modest goal, but at the end of the day, wow, I was really somebody who inspired people today. And then you're going to really ask this question. So what is, on the basis of this little, you know, 1 week of data, what is my default future, either as a leader, that's the A-minus version, or as a person? Okay, and you're just going to start noticing that. Okay, and if you take that information that really comes from that actually into this next call that we're going to do about being a genius, you'll see how to really put in as a noble cause, as an invented future, who you are as a genius instead of who you are as a, you know, person given by this sense of a default future. So again, what we've covered in this, you know, second part, first one was about the bank and the security guard and the machine part, was you've got like a category 5 hurricane that's going to spin off all these little default futures. You want to deal with the big one, the big macro default future. And how do you know it? There's an A-minus version. You ask the question, what's the default future of myself as a leader? Okay. And the A-plus version is, so what's the default future of myself as a person, as a human being? And how do you get at that? 7 nights, you're going to ask the question, who I was today was, and you're going to complete that sentence. And in the morning, you're going to say, who I will be today will be, and you're going to complete that. Seven days of data, okay, that's your homework. And then on the next call, we'll really talk about how to really transition that overall default future into one that you create, one that you author, which is you as a genius. So we're just about out of time here, and I know Julian has a quick announcement at the end, but let's just hear from one or two people at the end about what you got out of the call. So if you would like to say something about what you got out of this little discussion today, especially these two things we've talked about, please hit number 1 on your phone. So if you'd like to comment, hit number 1. Okay, let's go to Leah.
Hi.
Hi,
Leah.
Can you
hear me?
I can hear you.
I'm retired at this point in my life, and I think this series of calls that you have are most awakening. When I worked, I did X. I wasn't very, I didn't make a lot of money and stuff, but I was successful at my job. I had no idea why. And this makes it a very interesting way to look at working. But the thing about the person, who I am as a person, I never thought about doing that, and that is so cool. The other part is, how am I going to tell my son about this? He's in the Navy, and he's a genius, but
yeah.
He won't listen to me because I've been saying he's a genius since he was baby.
Sure. Well, you're his mom. You're a little biased. But
yes,
he probably
big biased.
We all believe you. You've got a genius son. Well, you know, and that's I know you're asking that more kind of rhetorically, but, you know, the thing about being a genius is we all are. You know, we're all born with these really remarkable characteristics. And as a society, we just, you know, suck at helping other people find out what those are. And we can all kind of see it in other people, but often we find it difficult to see it in ourselves. The difficulty, we'll get into this in the next call, is once you see your genius, then the kind of the hubris road is you become really arrogant about it, and you become very stage 3 about it, and you beat up other people because they're not as good at it as you are. And so, you know, if you really look at the careers of people who've identified their genius, a lot of them don't end well. So we need to make sure that we not only identify the genius in other people and ourselves, but then we handle it in the right way, that we don't kind of get overcome by the hubris of all of that. So that's a real challenge. Well, thank you, Leah. Oh, and for anyone who's retired or you know anyone who's retired, this question about who, what's your default future as a human being is epically important. Okay, my dad retired from aerospace after he'd worked in, for the same company for 44 years. We thought we were going to lose him. Family thought he was going to die kind of a couple years after his retirement, because he didn't, his default future as a person was, you know, I'll get old and I'll die and my friends will die and I'll go to their funerals and eventually they'll come to mine.
Yeah,
you know,
I was in aerospace.
Real challenge.
Also. Yeah.
Real challenge. As a society, we just suck at finding ways to help people who are in that stage.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear from George about what you got out of the call, and then we'll wrap it up, and again, Julian has a quick announcement. George, what did you get out of today's call?
Yeah, right. I loved it. I've got some notes here that just triggered off several things for me. The first part where you were talking about, like, if I do X and I get Y, if I do X, you know, I deserve Y, like that, it kind of triggered off an old kind of notion that's been around for a while about being, doing, and having. You know, like, and so people go for the having, you know, if I can have that, I'm going to be happy. And to have that, I have to do that. And then, of course, we find out we've got it backwards, you know, as we kind of grow up, if you will,
right,
where it's about being, you know, getting the being part right. So when I wrote that down, I saw how that aligns with the stages. And I don't know if you've thought about it. I'm sure you have. The idea that S1 is like having, you know, the survival stuff.
Right.
And then S2 or S3 is about doing things.
Right.
And then S3 is really the being part, you know, like that. They kind of lined up as stages.
Yeah, if you don't have the being core, you know, as a person or as a tribe, then really all you have to do is your accomplishments and your skills, and you start measuring yourself against other people, and, you know, we wonder why 75% of workplace cultures are stage 3 or below. It's because we really have filled in that, you know, to use your word, the being piece, and stage 4 is driven by that.
Another thing, when you were talking about the you know, like, we're all geniuses, you know, and yeah, absolutely, we get that. And I was noticing when you were talking about the security guards and the machine parts, and I was just reflecting on, you know, yeah, I did a lot of machine part work. I did a lot of security guard. And then I thought, well, you know, I do. There's parts of me that are constantly playing the security guard, checking things out, watching stuff, making sure I'm okay. And then I've got the machine part, you know, that's handling the this and that and another thing. And then I have these genius things, and they're always there. You gotta, you know, you run your life. It's the balance,
right,
and the awakening to integrating all of these pieces so that your genius, you know, really does have some fertile ground to flower, if you will.
Yeah, that's well
great,
said.
Great.
You know, the overall thing on, I hope, you know, on both of these is that the default future of yourself as a person, until you really focus on it, kind of has to do with being a security guard, right, or being a machine part. I mean, and the default future of being a machine part or a security guard is you'll continue to be a security guard or a machine part until you retire, and then you're going to have this major kind of life crisis. For some reason, it affects men more than it affects women. The data is pretty clear on that. We're not quite sure why. Most men don't live that long after retirement, you know, and that told me the story of my dad. And so we got to do something about that, and we can do it here. You know, it starts with going through these exercises. Remember the practices. So then the two just quick announcements. I'll make one, and I'll turn it over to Julian for the other one. Is part of our commitment here for these free calls for people who are interested in what we're doing. It's really our goal just to, you know, give back to people who really supported us, and ultimately then we hope that you'll, you know, give back to other people in your communities. My colleague and co-author John King is doing one of these free calls on gap analysis, and that's Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific time. So you can go to our website and register for that, get your pin just like you did here. Again, that's Monday, 4 p.m. Pacific time, and that's on gap analysis. That's the first step in setting these great micro strategies to do things that are really amazing and that can supercharge your career. And then, Julian, I think you're going to tell us a little bit about Tribal Leadership 1, and then that'll conclude our call.